Welcome back to What the Hell? This is your favorite co-host, Andrea, here. And today we're continuing the conversation about sexual and reproductive health and women's rights to health. So today I have a very special guest. Her name is Dr. Sukriti Chauhan. And she's an INLAC scholar, a trained lawyer with a master's in international development law and human rights from Warwick University. She has close to a decade of advocacy and communications expertise in public health and human rights. CEO and ETI, an organization started in October of 2020, her work focused on empower, transform, and inspire change, working with the most marginalized and vulnerable populations in India and across the globe. She has presented and published her work at the global and national level. She started her first NGO for abandoned HIV-positive women in the year 2000, and she's a trained Indian classical singer and an avid animal rights activist. Welcome to the show, Sukriti.
Thank you so much, and such a pleasure to be with you, and love the tagline of What the Health, and I'm going to use it everywhere I go, of course, referring to the fantastic work you guys are doing, but it's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks so much, and it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So I wanted to start out because International Women's Day was this past week, right? Which, by the way, happy belated International Women's Day.
Same to you.
Thank you, thank you. And it's always a really good time to kind of reflect on the accomplishments that we've done. And for me personally, I always like reflecting on the strong women that I've had in my life as well during this day and this month in general, to be honest. So I kind of wanted to start out our conversation asking you, what does International Women's Day mean for you?
So when you started out by saying that, you know, on this day and maybe through the month, I actually want every day to be International Women's Day. I think women are the ones who keep the world moving. Women are the ones from whom kings are born. There is a very famous quote. But I do think, you know, we really, I'm glad there's one day, but I hope we can turn it into an everyday thing with our work as we move forward. It was a very special International Women's Day for me because, as you rightly mentioned, I launched my organization in October 2020. And COVID, of course, has been disempowering and shocking as a pandemic across the globe, but also empowering in some ways to some of us. And I'm definitely one of those because it got me moving to start something that has been my dream for so long. So it was on International Women's Day that I actually co-hosted a very interesting conversation called Unmute Yourself. But I wanted to become a series where we are talking about some specific issues that really impact women. And this conversation was focused on non-communicable diseases as a subject because I think we just brush it under the carpet, whether it be postpartum depression, whether it be diabetes, whether it be body shaming. And I think those really have long-term impact. I don't think we talk about these things. So I was very proud to host this conversation. And I actually had a great mix of speakers, which included somebody who's been working with CNN, now is an entrepreneur, then somebody who actually works with the radio. And, you know, the stories that come through on her radio channel every day. I also had a policymaker who makes policies for India in, you know, in terms of women and talks about the patriarchal bias as a man, which is a refreshing thing to see, along with a few doctors who were there and somebody who's worked with UN Women to give us a global perspective on, you know, how gender has changed as a conversation over the years. So I was very happy, very proud to do that. And I hope that it becomes into a series where we address issues of mental health, where we address issues of women's employability and options. So I'm going to stop there.
I think that's super interesting. And it's also, like you said, it's very important to have those conversations, not only on a day like International Women's Day, but every day, right? Because there are a lot of barriers that we have to address. There's a lot of things that we have to work on. And especially that comes in nicely to the next topic, especially on the topic of women's health, right? So let's start out with a positive here. What are some great accomplishments that we've done in regards to women's health?
I love the positive aspect of it because there's so much more that we can do. But I do think it's been incredible to watch, countries change the way they look at women's health. I'm going to give you the perspective of India because, you know, given the fact that we are the most populated country in the world, 50% of our population comprises of women. And not till very long ago did we think that we need to focus on women. And I think the big milestones that we've managed to achieve is increasing life expectancy for women to start with. You know, that has happened because we've got facilities, we've got treatment centers, we've got hospitals where now women can access healthcare as they require. And the other milestone related to that then naturally is that infant mortality rate and maternal mortality rates have reduced considerably over the last 10 to 15 years. We have seen that happen. The other thing that's important is, you know, and not many people talk about this, but I think just protecting your healthcare workers who are women wasn't happening till very recently. And I'm going to touch upon a very sensitive case of Aruna Shanbagh. She was a nurse in a Mumbai hospital who was raped and assaulted and frankly never got out of her coma and passed away. There was a battle that was fought for her dignity. And I think it really turned the way we looked at protection for healthcare workers. I'm sure you know of the frontline workers in India, you know, the ASHAs, that's what we call them. There are 300 million women who are working at the front lines. And, you know, COVID-19 actually showed us some of the grave dangers that they face, you know, from being abused, from being assaulted, and, you know, not water thrown at them, food thrown at them, violence, and just verbal abuse. So I think that has really changed. It continues. It needs to be something that we keep working towards because, frankly, without a healthcare system and its people, there is very little point in, you know, trying to change the system. The last thing I want to add is that, you know, health is directly also related to mental health, sexual health. And I think India, by making its own law to protect women from sexual harassment, really took a big leap. And I think we forget, we look at health as only the physical and the outside, and it isn't. And I think that's been a revolution. So those were some of the points that I wanted to add.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to really highlight that health isn't only the physical. It has a lot of aspects that goes into it, and everything at the end really does impact health. And I think a lot of the things that you said are meant to be celebrated. We have done a lot of work in those areas. Maternal mortality and infant mortality have improved tremendously, especially within like the recent decades. And I think those are things that we don't talk about enough.
I would also like to add, if you'll allow me to, that immunization. India really is a story to celebrate when it comes to vaccinations. Yeah. And, you know, being the most populated nation, I think it has led from front. And I am very proud to say that, you know, I am an Indian and I've watched this happen. Eradicating polio from India was one of the biggest achievements any health system can have. And we continue to strive towards 100% vaccination because if you can vaccinate, you can save. And it's basic. And COVID has taught us that and how so.
Yes, definitely. Another thing to really celebrate as well. You know, as a whole, I feel like the world in general is in this positive trend. We are getting better. We are, especially when it comes to women's health and in other topics related to women, we are making progress. However, that doesn't take away the fact that there is still a lot of work to be done. And I think I would like you, Sukriti, if you could really walk us through some areas that we need to improve in regard to women's health. And some areas that we're neglecting in women's health as well.
So some of the areas that I definitely think we are neglecting is I want to touch upon something called the life cycle of a woman. And I think those will really highlight to us that at each stage, what are the areas that we are neglecting? So let's talk about pregnancy. Let's talk about, you know, the fact that a woman's body has to go through this entire cycle. And then you give birth. And you know that you and I both know India has dealt with the issue of female feticide for so long. And it's still there. It's very much there. And it is a challenge that is deep-rooted in patriarchy, subjugation, and, you know, societal beliefs that women cannot be as good as men and girls cannot be as good as boys. There is a boy preference phenomenon which exists, which we are trying to address. I think we've made some improvement there. Now, if a baby is born, the problem is that, you know, we are not there for the women. We are not there for the mother. Many times, the maximum amount of healthcare a woman gets is only during pregnancy. So you'll see, you know, a lot of healthcare options being offered to the woman when she's pregnant. It doesn't happen preconception. It doesn't happen when she is very young. It doesn't happen when she becomes older. So I do think that narrative needs to really change. Now, if you do have a healthy baby girl, you may be going through postpartum depression, but that's an issue we don't want to address. So I think those are some of the challenges related to pregnancy. And I think those definitely require us to look within as a society, work together, collaborate, spread information, awareness, empower women. And like I said, unmute has become the word of COVID-19 this year. We really need to unmute. Now, let's go to the young child as she's growing up. We have had an issue with child marriage for years. There is a legislation. Things have become better, but COVID-19 just reversed it. And there's obviously an increase in child marriage. So now if a young girl gets married at 10 or 11 and she becomes pregnant at 14 or 15, she is a young child who's become pregnant and will be a young mother. And then because there's lack of nutrition, that cycle will continue. That lack of nutrition will affect this young mother, it will affect the young child, and will lead to stunting and, you know, development issues with the child, which will go on to affect the way they grow. So that's the cycle I'm talking about. That, you know, we really need to break the cycle of child marriage, teenage pregnancy, if we really want to protect our women and if we really want to protect future generations. Because everything is ultimately linked into not only happiness, but also economic growth of a nation. And if women are not going to be part of that narrative, then it's going to be really difficult for India to really reach the potential it is positioned to reach. At the end, I'll just add that as you grow older as women, there are issues of menopause, for example. And I really want to touch upon that because I think it's shrouded in shame, the concept of menstruation, the concept of menopause. It's linked to religion, it's linked to having unclean blood. And menopause almost has become, I'm sorry to say this, but the butt of jokes. And I have never found it funny. And that is happening because we as a society don't talk about it. You know, the point from where a woman becomes a mother to a caregiver to then going through a life in her old age where she needs support. But instead of support at every stage, what women are receiving is, you know, stigma. And I think it's time that we start addressing it. So in a nutshell, I hope I've been able to cover that for you. And linking it to the concept of safe spaces, I don't think women have those spaces, whether it's about going to a toilet or it's about having a bath or it's about addressing the fact that you're on your period and you may need to change your napkin. There aren't safe spaces, which is resulting in rapes and assaults. So I do think it's all interlinked, but health needs to be made a priority. But I think in that, it's not about women coming out and just talking about it. That's not the way it's going to work. I think we need to talk to our men. I think men need to understand issues women have, and then governments need to focus on that.
Definitely. And I think that the life cycle of a girl really helps us understand that, and it illustrates the different vulnerabilities that a girl and a woman can encounter throughout their life. It's not just a specific moment. It's something that continues to follow them as they continue to grow. And I think that's something that we need to talk about. And circling back to menopause and not having safe spaces, I think that's super important, right? I think that just now in 2020, 2021, we're starting to see those safe spaces to at least talk about our period, right, as women. And I think menopause still has a long way to go. And we still need to create those safe spaces to talk about those through the physical changes we go through and through the support that we need, especially in regards to these topics. So yes, I think that you illustrated it perfectly, and hopefully our listeners felt the same way. I did kind of want to take a moment and reflect on a couple statistics that I stumbled upon. And I read in a report that there was going to be a decline of 80% on sexual and reproductive health services. And this kind of opens up the conversation on how does COVID-19 affect all this progress that we made, and how does COVID-19 affect this life cycle of a girl and the progress that we've made on that?
That's a great question. And I think the way COVID-19 has impacted or made us realize, you know, the potential a pandemic of this range can have on women's health and rights is fascinating and scary at the same time. So what COVID-19 revealed to us and what it's impacted is that, you know, India at least had very good supply chains where, you know, services were reaching women, and all of that broke down because we went into a lockdown. And in fact, it's going to be 1 year, and a year has passed, and this was the last normal week humankind had last year. And I think when the supply chains broke down, what happened is services as basic as menstrual hygiene kits, you know, just related things that women need to address their personal needs, stopped reaching them. And the automatic impact of that was an increase in infections, an increase in, you know, women not knowing where to call or where to go to. And I think that was something really shocking for me. But I also want to commend the community-based organizations that, you know, really were the real heroes for me. The first frontline workers and the doctors, and second were the NGOs and the community-based organizations that really leapt into action. And if they were not there, and if we don't take a minute to acknowledge them and to thank them, I think the situation would have been much worse than what we are in. COVID-19 also revealed not only the health impact, but an economic impact. You know, women anyways make literally half of what men do. I'll take a very specific segment of, you know, the migrant woman, the one who travels out to work. They were left with no options at all. And then they had to go back home. The families are dependent on them. So they were really left out in the cold. The third thing COVID-19 revealed, and I've written about this, is the link between domestic violence and mental health. And it's shocking, but I can understand. Domestic violence went up by 200% in India. Women had no access to any resources to save themselves. And obviously, you know, being locked in a house, imagine the fear or the abuse a woman would be facing. There's a very important example that I want to share with you. I actually did a conversation with community level radio jockeys. And, you know, they came up with stories after stories of women calling them. And how I told them, you know, you can develop code words, because it's not easy to report violence. It's not easy to ever get out of it. It's not easy to trust anybody to address it for you. So we came up with code words like dog, cat, which would match the severity of what the situation the woman is in, so that we can step in. So I think, and linking it back with the last point of, you know, you talked about sexual and reproductive health services. They were not even considered to be essential till organizations stepped in to change that. And yes, we worked with the government to ensure that it was made a part of the essential list. But imagine not having access to any kind of safe space to, you know, get sexual and reproductive health choices. So I think those were the things that I want to just touch upon.
Yeah, no. And, you know, this conversation is really just a small piece in what sexual and reproductive health is and what sexual and reproductive health means for many women, especially when it comes to those safe choices. So moving past COVID-19, because there is going to be an end to this pandemic at some point. But before that end, we need to start thinking of solutions, and we need to start thinking of ways to regain control of the progress that we've made in a lot of the areas that we talked about today. So in your opinion, what are some ways that not only governments but communities can start regaining that control and reclaiming the progress that we've made?
So I think governments absolutely have a very critical role to play because, you know, state needs to be responsible for its citizens rather than the other way around. And I think India has done very well in it. And, you know, of course, there have been missteps and nobody was prepared for the pandemic. So to just criticize everything is not going to be okay. And I actually think India has dealt with the pandemic much better than a lot of other countries did. And I think there are lessons to learn in there. Now, looking at the post-COVID-19 world, you know, I touched upon violence and it's something that's very close to my heart. I am a survivor of it myself. So I do know that at what levels it can really impact the psyche, the physical being of a woman. Of course, men also get abused, but we are focusing on women's rights and health today. So I'm going to stick to that. I think one of the first things we need to do is that we need to include a set of measures to address violence against women in the response plan post-COVID-19. I think violence and that conversation around violence and what are the mediums, what are the safe spaces? I keep going back to safe spaces. What are those code words? How are you going to help these women? It needs to be actively spoken about in the response plan that nations prepare. It is not a debate. It is not a choice anymore, and it is something we just have to do. Another thing that I think is very important is creating support systems and, you know, those spaces where women can go and approach help. So I do think that's also critical. It is not that difficult to do. If you can create centers to get your ID cards made, you can create safe spaces for women to meet, to talk. And I think those spaces are missing globally. I think healthcare workers across the world need to be trained. Though I mean, like I said, I think I tip my hat to each and every one of them, because while you and I were inside our houses in our lockdowns, those were the women who were out there. But I think healthcare workers, both men and women, need to be trained to provide counseling services to women, because you don't know which struggle a woman is going through. Example, you or me. I may be struggling with something and I'm going on pushing it at the back of my mind because, you know, I think it will pass. It never passes. And I think as healthcare workers, as primary caregivers, I think there is definitely a need for them to understand how important their role is when they have to counsel. So I think a lot of training techniques need to be included in government programs. I think it's very important, especially for a country like India, which has a huge primary healthcare system, right? I think it's very important to include the concept of psychological support and mental health. I think we have not spoken about that issue. I don't think we are sensitive enough to even understand it, how to approach it today. And that's something I am personally going to be working on to change. So I think those are some of the things. And along with that, I have seen communities lead change, and so have you. In fact, one of the examples that I quote is, you know, my recent work with the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, which is a global organization focused on doing some fantastic work with adolescent and young children. And in India, I had an opportunity to lead a program with some of the best partners this country has to actually work in a tribal area in a state of Orissa, which has probably the highest number of tribals in India, and work in a very small district called Angul. You'll have to really look at India's map to also find it. But, you know, it was fascinating to watch that how communities can change narratives. And it was focused on nutrition. You know, there are services and policies that exist in India, but people don't know about them. And if you know about them, you don't know how to access it. So it was about making government accountable. It was about ensuring that people get what they need, but they be the voice of that campaign. So I think communities, for me, of course, are the most powerful piece of the puzzle. I don't think we focus on their value as much as we should. But like I said, ultimately, it's up to the state as well to listen to its people.
Definitely. And I completely agree. I think there's a lot of work to be done, but one step at a time. And as long as we're moving forward, that's the most important thing. So I just wanted to thank you once again for your time. Thank you so much for sharing that insight and having this wonderfully inspirational conversation, especially during a critical time such as the one that we're living now. And Yeah, thanks. It was great and a pleasure having you.
Thank you, Andrea, and all the best for all the work, and hope to stay connected, and actually would love for you to be there in the next Unmute Yourself conversation.
Yes, definitely. I would love to. It sounds like such a wonderful initiative. It was great listening to Sukriti's experiences and all the important information that she shared with us today. These are things that we need to talk about. Change starts with actually acknowledging the things we need to work on. And it's clear and evident that while we've done a lot of progress in these areas, such as sexual and reproductive health and women's rights to health, we still have a long way to go, and we can't let COVID-19 reverse all the great work that we've done. So, I just wanted to thank you once again for listening to What the Health, and I hope you stay safe and stay healthy.